You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. By the way, we're going to get into our top five things that we're looking forward to seeing in minicamp here in this segment. But before we do that, Gibbs, I wanted to share a tweet that I got yesterday with you and wanted to see your thoughts on it.
All right.
And it comes to me from my buddy at WMW Studios. He said, as you played that song Friday for 5 minutes on CBD, the Cavs went down 20. Time to shut it all down. Hashtag thanks, buddy. I wrote back, you're holding the song Friday responsible for this beatdown on a Sunday? Rebecca Black is not that powerful. And he said, it was added to a bad night in Cleveland sports. Can you believe that? We played it on Friday. And it's called Friday. And he's saying that it impacted something that happened on
Sunday.
I'm
just glad I have nothing to do with this.
You're innocent.
I was getting dunked.
You're getting dunked in a tank. You're innocent. Yes.
I'm sorry. It's one thing if it was playing while the game was going on or leading up to the game. It was like our motivational. I get it. I would take it out. But it's going into the weekend. It did not impact my weekend. The calf sucking, unfortunately, was a damper on the weekend. But it didn't impact my entire weekend.
No. By the way, Gibbs.
Not blaming the song, and we'll hear it again this week.
Yeah, we will. By the way, Gibbs, it's wedding week.
It is.
It is. My wife asked me this morning, she goes, what are you wearing? I go, did you not read the invite? T-shirt, shorts, flip-flops. Boom. Mic drop. Done.
Booyah.
Thank you, Gibbs, for making it so easy.
I'm trying, man. My buddy coming in from Illinois is like, can I just wear my Cubs jersey? I was like, go ahead. You wear whatever you want, man.
What?
Really and truly, whatever you want.
That's awesome.
It really is unbelievable. It's fantastic.
We're gonna miss you, Zagura.
Huh? I know.
The best thing about it is
you guys.
It's gonna be. I have a feeling it's gonna be fun because of the setting and everything that you put into it and just reading the invite. But I think because of knowing your personality, your expectation isn't for everything to go perfect. Because when you expect everything to go perfect, it never does, and you feel let down. It's gonna be just come whenever you want. We're gonna eat. We're gonna drink. We're going to dance.
We're going to
be comfortable. We're going to be married. And that's what it's going to be. And then it becomes all about the people that
Heck
you
yeah.
have actually come.
Yeah, we're setting up a wedding app for the pictures, all that stuff. People can download pictures. We don't have a photog for the actual reception. We want people to take their own pictures and then download them to the app.
Sweet.
Adam Schwartz wants to know if people can ride your zero-turn mower at the wedding.
They're riding that down the aisle. Duh. Her on, you know, her like laying across his lap
it's
down
a,
the aisle.
It's a fine beast. I got to get that out tonight and start the final
start
mow.
Start the cross cut.
Yep. Got to start the mow for the Festivus on Friday night too. Yeah. By the way, it's I got game four the night before. Monica was like, "Well, it's the rehearsal dinner. I'm sure people will like they'll be gone by like 9:30, 10 o'clock." I go, "Honey, the game doesn't even start till 9.
Yeah.
People aren't getting out of our house till midnight. It's going to be a long, long weekend."
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but a good one. So we'll see. Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff still to do.
Any surprises?
Working on a couple.
Okay.
Yeah,
there's always one.
Working on a few.
Or two. That's good.
Yeah, we've got some very cool things set up for people. And
awesome.
Yeah. Hopefully a couple special appearances by a few people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Aaron Goldhammer.
Not likely.
Yes. All right. We're going to hear from Spencer Drango in a little bit. But right now, Matt Wilhelm, let's start. Top five things you're looking forward to at minicamp this week.
I've wrote down four so far, and I'm sure I'll probably agree with you.
Counting us down, Gibbs?
In many of them.
Number five,
I am looking, simply by being out at practice, the one thing that I love about being out there, being a defensive guy, is hearing the communication and the execution of this defense. Because we were bottom of the barrel against the run, against the pass, total defense. And I think the confidence that Ray Horton exuded right here in the studio and just understanding what we've learned in talking to some of the defensive players, how different it's going to be and how excited they are to play in this defense. And for me, I will get a sense of how ready we are. And maybe not necessarily how good we're going to be, but the communication and the execution of the defense happening throughout this mini camp prior to the pads coming on in training camp.
All right, number five for me, with Gary Barnidge nursing himself back to health following the sports hernia surgery. He will be ready for training camp, but for me, thing that I'm looking forward to seeing is, can a guy who was one of my favorites last year, EJ Bibbs, step up in the absence of Barnidge as a pass-catching tight end? Can he do that? Can he look like a guy who seems like he belongs with the first team and be productive for whoever's at quarterback? And behind Bibbs, Seth DeValve's going to get more reps at that tight end position. I want to see him as well. Now, maybe Telfer will get some looks there, but my understanding, more of a blocker, not a pass catcher. I want to see, if Barnidge were to get hurt, can Bibbs step in and be a guy that can move the chains for this team? I believe he can. He is Bibtacular.
Number four.
But we want to see that. Gibbs, we're hearing from Ray Farmer right there.
Sorry. You shouldn't be now.
We're not.
We're not.
And it was just in your headphones.
Oh. Okay. Number four.
Number four.
My bad.
You're good. My number four takeaway from this mini camp is I want to understand the hierarchy of our wide receivers coming out of this mini camp. Now, I know – well, actually, the best – it's how they will enter training camp. So where Hugh Jackson and Al Saunders feel these wide receivers are at, it should be clear to us by Thursday who's the number one wide receiver, who's the number two, and maybe even understand who's going to be a number three. And they should start training camp that same way. And based on our, you know, inter-building conversations with Al Saunders, those three guys will start by getting a predominant amount of the starting reps.
Yeah, I do want to see that. That's something we do want to see. For me, my number four is going to be on the offensive line. The first team offensive line has been Thomas, Batonio, Cam Irving, Greco, Alvin Bailey. I want to see if Alvin Bailey kind of cements himself there, how they get to work together as they do more and more. And can Spencer Drango push him? Does he get any first-team reps at that right tackle position?
Number three.
My number three takeaway from this, and it kind of coincides with my number five, is, but on the offensive side of the ball, the fine-tuning of this offense. I want it to look and feel like an NFL team executing an offense that they've been in for more than just a few months. And now, I will also discount the fact that they've only been in this scheme for a few months, but at this point, you have paid professionals going out there executing it. You've got a guy that started games in RG3. You've got a guy that started a bunch of games in Josh McCown. You have some young wide receivers, but you've got a good offensive line. You've got some playmakers at running back. I want to see it look and feel like a team that can get first downs and score on Sundays.
And I'm going to go on the other side of the ball here. Number three for me, as we've heard a lot about Justin Gilbert, what will we see from Justin Gilbert in this minicamp? Joe Hayden, we hope to have back soon. So this is really the last time we can guarantee Justin Gilbert getting first-team reps. How does he perform with those first-team reps? Is he a guy that the Browns feel like they could go in the season with him starting opposite Joe Hayden? This is time for him to plant those seeds. And then in the secondary in general, Jamar Taylor, Pierre Desir, the safeties, the battles between Poyer and Raheem Moore, Ibrahim Campbell, Kindred. How do these start to shake out as they start to slot themselves for training camp?
Number two.
My number two takeaway, and I have it written down, but it's along those same lines. Justin Gilbert, what role is he going to have? When you talk about draft class, you hate to say it, but you talk more about the draft guys that haven't lived up to that expectation, and he's the top of our list right now. I think Barkevious Mingo is probably shortly behind him. But where is Justin Gilbert going to fit into this scheme? Because eventually, there's got to be a return on an investment of drafting him where we did 2 years ago.
And my number two will piggyback on one of yours from earlier. It's the wide receivers. Corey Coleman has shown the flashes. Looks like he's going to be the top guy. Who's going to be the running buddy alongside him? Is it Terrell Pryor? Can he continue what we've seen, a phenomenal offseason from him? Again, we won't know as much until we get the pads on later in the summer, but for now, this is the final chance to showcase. Rashard Hollywood Higgins, how does he look? Ricardo Lewis, who's going to step up along with Corey Coleman? We know Hawk will probably get some work in the slot, but Terrell Pryor, can he maintain the meteoric rise he seems to be on at the wide receiver position?
Number one.
And my number one takeaway of things that I'm going to watch, and it kind of coincides with number three, as I said, fine-tuning the offense. If we're fine-tuning the offense, the ball shouldn't be on the ground or intercepted an awful lot. And that falls back on whoever it is playing the quarterback position. That's RG3, that's Josh McCown, that's Cody Kessler. Where are we at? And I think I'd love to say our offense will go as Hugh Jackson will go, but at this point right now, I think our offense will go as whoever is playing quarterback for us will go. And I want to see execution. I want to see completions from RG3.
Yeah, to me, number one is quarterback, and that's been the problem here in Cleveland for a long, long time. How does RG3 look? What I want to see, fewer examples and maybe a complete elimination of where he gets to the top of his drop, his first read, second read aren't there, and he just kind of frees in the pocket. Ball out quickly, on time, accurately, making plays. I want to see the quarterback position step up. I want to see Kessler continue his development and look more comfortable. And to me, though, it's all about the quarterback play. Can the Browns have some sessions here in this mandatory minicamp where it looks like a team where the ball's not hitting the ground in 7-on-7s, where it looks like a lot of good pitch and catch? Can they do that? That's what I want to see. That's number one for me. Gibbs, what are the top couple things you're looking for?
You know, I'm in
running backs. Got to prove something to you. Running backs, yeah. Right? Number one.
We'll get to that, my friend. We will get to that all in due time. I'm excited to see, like, Jordan Payton, who has been in school and not been part of these OTAs.
Will he be back for this?
I believe so. I believe he's here for this. Now that we're going to put the pads on, correct? Do we understand the rules of engagement for minicamp?
Yes, there are no pads.
No pads.
We're still playing touch football.
We are.
Well, that's garbage, because then I can't – I don't know anything about the defense. I'm sorry. I can't evaluate a defense if you're playing touch football, because the offense is going to have the leg up every time. Yes? No? Am I wrong on that?
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I think
it used to look like it in years past here, so if it does look like it, I'll take that as a positive.
There you go. I'm excited to see the young wide receivers. And I'm interested to see how RG3 looks throwing the short pass, because I've seen him throw the deep ball and it looks good and everything looks good. There are moments where the short intermediate pass isn't been so great in OTAs. And I'm interested to see how that comes to fruition. I'm not saying he can't. I think it's a question of timing.
Uh-huh.
And I want to see where we're at on the timing thing, because this is your dress rehearsal before training camp.
Yeah, this is. It is the final dress rehearsal.
So I'm interested in that. I'm interested to see how Cam Irving handles things at center. You know, I'm excited to see what these guys can do this week with everybody there. Let's see what the offseason has done for this team. You know, this is where they should be. As Coach Jackson said last week, we're putting it all together right now.
By the way, I don't know if you guys were aware of this or not, but these mini camp practices are at 3:00.
Yes. I don't know if I like that or not yet.
Hmm.
I mean, I think they should be practicing in the afternoon, because that's when you're going to be playing, is in the afternoon. I don't know if I like the 3:00 yet or not. I might need to see that one.
Well, we'll see it tomorrow and Wednesday. All these are open to the media, so we will have a lot of stuff for you the next 2 days here on the Browns practice, again from 3 to 5 on Tuesday and Wednesday. All right, we will be back with more CBD, including a talk with Spencer Drango, one of the people that we want to keep an eye on, competing for the right tackle spot, maybe working behind John Greco at right guard and more. We'll talk with him when we return.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zegar, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. One of the things that we're always trying to look at here with the team is the offensive line. And one of the battles at the right tackle position, you've got Alvin Bailey in the lead right now. Two rookies, Sean Coleman, who is yet to practice for the Browns, and Spencer Drango. Well, we talked to Spencer Drango about his opportunity to come to Cleveland.
It's been a blast. You know, it's been a whirlwind so far. All the anticipation leading up to getting here, you know, Browns are a week later than, you know, the majority of the NFL team. So you have teammates leaving and coming back, you know, going to rookie camp and coming back and, you know, saying about their experiences. So there's a little anticipation and anxious energy building up. But once we've been here, it's been go, go, go. So you don't have time to be anxious. But it's been a lot of fun, you know, learning a lot and just trying to get better.
Do you think you were going to get away from Emmanuel Agba?
You know, I don't know. It was a possibility for sure, but now we're on the same team. You know, iron sharpens iron, so hopefully we can, you know, make each other better, and, you know, hopefully one day become all pros.
What's it like to come with a teammate of yours from school, Corey Coleman?
You know, it brings a sense of familiarity and comfortability. I know how he works. He knows how I work. You know, I don't have to worry about, you know, getting to know him. It's one less guy. You know, Griff as well. Don't know him as well. I was on the team a year with him. So looking forward to, but I know how they work and I know how they are as people. So, you know, I'm really excited to play with both those guys again.
Obviously, a very successful tackle in college. We've heard some talk maybe you'll come inside, maybe you'll play tackle. Have they talked to you about that yet?
They have a little bit. So I talked to Coach Hunter just to kind of study the playbook. You know, what should I look at? He said primarily focus on right guard. And then, you know, we may work you inside a little bit at center. That's what I was studying for, you know, last couple of days. And I get out, we do start doing walkthrough, and about four plays in, he said, all right, go to right tackle. So it's kind of like, I don't really know where I'll be, but I'm hoping to get an opportunity to go out and play to help this team win.
Have you ever played guard before?
Nope. I played all, I guess, 5 years at Baylor, even redshirt year, I was left tackle.
Okay. All right, so is it a big change? And there are some guys who have done it, though. Joel Batonio, tackle to guard here. Cam Irving last year was a tackle, center, and then to guard. Have they people you can lean on there?
Yeah, you know, definitely having some of the vets we have here, you know, Joe being one of them. Awesome guys to learn from and just kind of take notes on and watch all year. Just to try to, obviously they're doing something really, really right. So just to try to mimic them and gain as much information I can. But, you know, never played guard before, and it's not uncommon for guys to move over, but anything to help this team win, which we, you know, have a pretty good chance of doing this year. Really good chance.
What's your first impression of Coach Jackson?
You know, first off the bat, he's intense and loves football. Seems very personable, though, you know, off the field. Haven't got a chance to talk to him that much, but looking, hopefully that'll change here in the near future. He really loves his stuff, very intense, and, you know, I can see why the Browns wanted him so much because he's an awesome coach.
What are you hoping to accomplish here in minicamp?
To get a firm footing on as much as I can learn on the offense, to go into OTAs and just be ready to start, you know, mixing up with the vets out there and try to learn from them and get it in and try to, you know, compete for that spot.
What do you think about the fact that your second practice ever with the Browns is going to be in First Energy Stadium in front of the fans?
You know, I'm really excited about that, just to kind of get that out of the way, you know, getting the stadium all out of the way. And, you know, we have some of the best fans in football, you know, probably the best fans. So just to be able to go out and have them see us and what the team, the future of the team, so to speak, is going to be awesome.
What's one thing you'd want the Dog Pound to know about you?
I guess I am. I you get what you see with me. So, you know, really anything. I'm a pretty fun-loving guy and like to go out and, you know, just hang out.
That's Spencer Drango. And Matt, for a rookie who's kind of gone through his rookie minicamp, OTAs, now this mandatory minicamp, what are they hoping to accomplish? What's somebody like Spencer Drango hoping to do here?
Obviously make an impact, and I think it comes first to his position coach, because to the naked eye, we're not watching the offensive line, and unless they get beat or something very, you know, blatant or very evident happens. But I think if I were Spencer Drango, is A, and you heard him talk about it in that snippet, talk about being in his playbook, showing these coaches each and every day that he's refining his technique. And then I just know, going back to Chris Dielman, a guy that I bring up every once in a while, he was a defensive player who, turned into an offensive lineman midway through training camp. So it's not like Spencer Drango, but what he did was he was nasty. You know, he was physical, and I promise you, Hugh Jackson's going to love a nasty, physical offensive lineman. The technique will come later, the understanding of the playbook, that will come in time. But if you go out and you're physical and you're nasty and you're getting after guys, which I know is hard,
sure.
But that point taken is, that is something that in training camp, when in pads, that if he plays nasty, has that mean streak and gets physical with Ogba, with Orchard, with Mingo, with Kruger, and he doesn't come across like a rookie because of his technique, because of his understanding of the playbook, because you can outplay your understanding of the playbook, or you can outplay what tenure you are in the National Football League just by doing it really, really hard, really, really fast and physical. You pop off the film when you do it at a tempo or at a physical nature that other guys aren't playing at across that front line, and he would stand out at that point.
When you are in a situation like this where you have 3 days, then you have a nice break, you're not in pads, what's the fine line, though, from showing – how do you show that physicality when you can't hit, but at the same time you don't want to hurt anybody? But you only have 3 days here, so I imagine you can go give a little extra knowing you're going to get some significant time.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, in the individual drill work and some of the group sessions, his understanding of the playbook, you know, not jumping off sides, those are evident, you know, ways to show the coaches. And you'd be surprised that, you know, 50% of the, you have an opportunity to run the ball or pass the ball, right? So in running the football, it's hand placement, it's chopping those feet, and, you know, tag blocking up to a linebacker and actually getting up on that linebacker and getting a push on him without being overly physical, of using your shoulders, which is why they have shoulder pads. But then when it comes to pass blocking, it's a lot of it is hand fighting.
Hands anyway.
You know, so if he's can show that he can control the physicality of a guy like Emmanuel Ogbah, or the speed of Mingo off the edge, or the vet Kruger off the edge, and he's handling those things in a super up-tempo, you know, last hurrah type of 3 days, he will walk away in good standing with these coaches.
And that's what he wants. This is the last opportunity to really slot himself before he goes through and gets to training camp here with the summer coming up for these players after the 3-day mandatory mini camp. Again, it begins tomorrow, and it will run tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday before the team breaks for the summer before coming back for training camp. 216-578-0850. Call us up. Browns, Cavs, we can talk anything you want. And for now, we'll talk about an interesting story about Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali, who passed away over the weekend. Arguably one of the greatest, biggest sports icons and political icons of all time here in this country and around the world. We'll come back with more CBD right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Well, welcome back to CBD. 216-578-0850. If you want to call us up, we'll go to the phone lines quickly. We've got Jack in Canton. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hello there, sir. Thank you. Two quick thoughts. Number one, I am excited to see what the Browns are going to do. I know we're starting over from scratch, but I think we're going to see some good things out of RG3. I like the fact that it seems like we got a draft class that has good heads on their shoulders, and you know, we're finally done with the Johnny Manziel fiasco. So I'm looking forward to it. I think if you'd ask most Browns fans, all we want to see is moving forward. Okay, begin to run the ball. Begin to do the fundamental things in pro football, and Browns fans are going to be content. It's just that we haven't seen that in the last 19 years. So, you know, we're allowed to be a little bit discouraged.
Absolutely.
On the Cavaliers side, I don't know how else to say it except say it this way. The Cavs are a good team, but we're not a great team. And we've seen in the first two games, fundamentally, athletically, team speed, we are nowhere near Golden State. It's men against boys.
And they certainly do look like a team that set an NBA record this year of 73
yes.
wins. It's amazing how people kind of forget that. But they're good.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, I go back to people thinking we're going to go, you know, four-game sweep, and we're going to sweep in our way through the finals as well. You know, and the three most likely opponents would have been the Thunder, the Warriors, or the Spurs. You know.
Yeah.
And now, I go back to your point. I mean, the Raptors' two home games were extremely humbling, I think, for every Cavs fan.
Yeah.
To know this, oh, there is a chink in our armor. You know, and it's not, you know, you're not going to win from the three-point line consistently. And I think to go into this series, we're not getting open looks.
No. They are winning in every
they are.
Single way. That's what's been going on so far in the National Basketball Association. So Muhammad Ali, as we all know, passed away over the weekend, the legend, 74 years of age. And there is an interesting story on Yahoo.com about Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali, who were great friends. And in 1966, the story goes, Jim Brown was in London making the movie The Dirty Dozen. Just so happened that boxing promoter Bob Arum was in town preparing for the Muhammad Ali's fight against Brian London in August. And Brown and Ali were big friends, etc. And, you know, Jim Brown, being a young, very athletic guy, thought it would be a good idea to fight Muhammad Ali. He thought that would be a pretty good fight. And Ali at that point was out, banned from the sport, if you remember that, because he refused induction into military service. So, and many people think that's when he was at his best. So Bob Arum was the promoter and went to, thought he would, you know, share the idea. He owed it to Jim Brown to share the idea with Muhammad Ali. So Arum went and told Ali what Jim Brown was proposing, that they would fight. So Ali knew that somebody who wasn't a boxer, like, had no chance against Muhammad Ali. So he told Arum that to bring Jim Brown to Hyde Park in London. And Brown, again, was 6'2", 230 at the time, about an inch shorter than Muhammad Ali, 15 pounds heavier. And this is the story goes, again, this is on yahoosports.com by Kevin. I don't know if it's, I think it's Iol is his name, is the author's name. And I could just picture this, and this has to be amazing. So they met, and this is, I'm quoting now, they met, and Arum said, Ali stood with his hands at his side and told Brown to hit him as hard as he could in the face. Arum says, and I quote, Jimmy throws a big punch at him and it misses. And then he throws another and another. And before long, he's thrown a lot of punches and he hasn't hit Muhammad Ali. And Ali's hands are at his side the entire time. And so as Brown slows down, Ali kind of hits him about 10 or 12 times in 2 seconds. And Jimmy just looked at us and kind of shrugged. Ali had proven his point.
Okay. There was, a friend of a friend was a, like, junior Olympic boxer when I was at Ohio State.
Okay.
So a guy that I played with on the team had a friend who was a junior, middleweight, featherweight, whatever it was. He was 125 pounds, 150 pounds soaking wet, right?
Okay.
But he was a junior Olympic boxer representing the country of the United States.
Okay.
And he'd come into Columbus and hang with us. And it's kind of, and I was just amazed at his hand speed and how, and I throw in the 150 pounds soaking wet because I'm, you know, 245 pounds at the time, 235 pounds, whatever it was. And I feel like if I could just get my hands on him, you know, I'd twist him up like a pretzel, bend him in half, you know, like bending steel. But I go, first of all, could I catch him like a chicken? You know, because he's obviously he's much faster or quicker than I am. And he'd probably punch me in the face 6 to 10 times, like before I could throw one haymaker and maybe not even land it. So I was just enamored with his hand speed. He just and I would ask him to do it all night. You know, we're drinking, we're having fun and whatever. I'm just like, let me see it. And I like, give me a flurry. And he just, and he'd throw like 15 punches in like a second and a half.
You literally didn't know what hit.
And I didn't know what, and he wouldn't punch me, but he's like, they were like an inch from my nose. So I could feel the wind. And to take it go back to this point is so much bigger, so much stronger. You know, the best of all time doing it. I could only imagine how fast his hands were and how explosive they were behind it. And that's why when I have an opportunity to say, hey, yeah, I was a professional athlete, but like how good a professional golfer is or how good these boxers are, we can be so critical from our armchairs when guys screw up. And I mean, even talking about LeBron with the free throws, that's why I wanted to replicate my heart rate, you know, to get it up to somehow go to the line and shoot it to go, this is what it's like. But to be the best in the world and to be the best to ever do it is an amazing thing. And in a obviously a terrible passing of someone like him, an icon.
Absolutely. And you talked about being close to these pros and how interesting it is. I went down to Saturday's round of the Memorial.
Yeah.
And on number 7, which is a par 5, I was able to literally be, I was the first person on the rope right behind these guys. And they were teeing off. Phil Mickelson teed off literally from where I am to you are right now in the studio. I couldn't touch him, but if I really leaned over, I might have been able to like pat his club on the way back.
Sure.
Mickelson, Rory, Jason Day, we saw. And just seeing those guys up close. And it was cool to watch them drive the ball, but we've all seen people who can drive a golf ball. When they're around the green, the touch, the hands, just how solid they, it's unbelievable how good these guys are.
And the one thing that I always thought, having an opportunity both while being at Ohio State and after going down to the Memorial, is the trajectory that they hit a golf ball with is unlike anything I've seen a regular civilian, no matter how good you are. You can be a scratch, Austin Davis or Andy Lee can be a plus one, plus two, whatever you want to call it. The trajectory that they hit these golf balls with is like the equivalent to an F-16 plane taking off an aircraft carrier. How it just rises and then it just
drops
just drops right where it needs to. And just the control is amazing.
Yeah, and it was cool. So I spent some time on number 6, number 7, really kind of around the whole course, number 9, and then camped out for a little bit at number 14's green, which is a short one. So to watch them hit wedges in from 100 yards, there were so many that were so good, but you also saw some of the battles for pros where Phil ended up bogeying from the middle of the fairway from 100 yards because he hit it so far past the pin with so much spin that it almost spun all the way back off the green and into a little bit of trouble for him and didn't get up and down. But just, yeah, those guys, they are good. I mean, they are good players, and guys you've never heard of are just out there lighting it up.
Yep.
And they're all just so good. It's interesting. 90% of them have the same swing. And then they're the guys that have their kind of very handsy swings or very, you know, they're different variations. But just seeing how good these guys are and the clubhead speed from a guy like Jason Day, who's, you know, obviously one of the longest drivers on tour, was very impressive to see. And it was cool. It was a neat experience. I'd recommend anybody go out there to the Memorial because you get to
the Firestone.
You get to be very close, which I think is really neat. There isn't a whole lot of it wasn't overly crowded. And you really get a real neat experience. And you saw, I mean, it was a great field of guys. Great, great field. Mickelson, who did I say? Mickelson, Rory, Dustin Johnson I got to see, Jason Day. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to see. All right, we'll be back. Final thoughts. Mini camp opening up tomorrow at 3 o'clock here in Berea. It's going to be fun to see. We've got one more segment here wrapping it up before a four-hour edition of the Bruce Hooley Show. Hooley and Dino, they're up next here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. Wrapping it up on Cleveland Browns Daily. Again, here's the schedule for those of you who are not familiar with it for the upcoming minicamp. Tomorrow, from noon to 1:30, players will be available in the media center. Practice will be from 3 to 5. Post-practice, head coach Hugh Jackson available in the media center tomorrow. The entire practice session's open to the media, of course. Wednesday, 12 to 1:30, again, select players in the media center, 3 to 5. Practice, post-practice, Hugh Jackson. Thursday, the schedule switches up, 10:30 to 10:45. Position coaches on the field, 10:45 to 12:45. Practice for the Cleveland Browns. So that's the media schedule and really the upcoming schedule for this mini camp. Now, is that typical to go from having OTAs be at one time and then all of a sudden you get to the mini camp and you go from having the 11:45 practice to the 3? Is that a big deal? Do players pay attention to that?
Not a big deal. I think it's The biggest deal is to make sure that all the players are aware and on board with the changes, and you'd be surprised the amount of paper that, you know, organizations or coaches use to make sure that players are simply on time, that they have the agenda, that they have the itinerary, because we are creatures of habit. So when you change something out from, you know, out from under us, when we're used to doing something some way, so you'll see the coaches, assistant coaches, everyone around these players overemphasize change of a schedule. See you at this time, because you'll be surprised the number of players that thinks they've got the evening or the afternoon or the morning free. It's like, huh, what? Huh? So, but yeah, it's good because I know for the Browns we're going to play a lot of 1 p.m. games, but prototypically a change in schedule changes dynamics, forces players to get uncomfortable, and yet still have the opportunity to perform and prove that to their head coach.
Well, it begins tomorrow. It'll be good to see them back on the football field after a few days off. The Browns mandatory mini camp. Tomorrow we'll have full coverage of that for you. We'll hear from all those players that talked earlier. We'll get those for you on tomorrow's show as well. We hope to have some live interviews for you here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Browns open their mandatory mini camp tomorrow, the first of 3 days, June 7th, June 8th, June 9th. As they wrap that up. All right, that'll do it for us today. Hools is up next. Stay tuned for Bruce Hooley and Dino. They'll be with you for the next 4 hours, breaking down the Cavs and much, much more here. For Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.